Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that war rocket Ajax to bring back his body?
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, I hope you're doing well tonight.
I am, and I hope you're doing well as well, Chris.
I am as well as can be expected.
How many times can we fit the word well into this opening of the show?
Well, let's see, Matt. I'm giving up on this bit preemptively. Matt, what do we do here on the show?
We pull water out of a well. No, we don't.
Not what we do.
No, we talk to comic book professionals about comic books.
Very true. And this week, we are very excited about the content of the show. We have Kelly Dale here talking about the omnibus that is going to be collecting the late Jeremy Dale's Skyward, an incredible series by an incredible talent who is honestly gone far too soon. We'll be getting to that in the interview and talking about how you can get your own copy of the Skyward Omnibus this week, in fact. But we also do a lot of other things on the show, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
That's right. And we're going to kick things off by thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
Oh, that's right, Matt. These are the people. They got out their phones. They got a Lyft. They said, hey, take me down to 123 Gimmick Street. And they went to patreon.com/warrocketajax and decided to kick in as little as a dollar every month to help us out, to help support the show, to help keep bonus episodes coming, to help keep the lights on around here, and help us pay those gimmicks that keep sending the mail called bills.
Chris, before I get into the names, I'm always delighted by you saying 123 Gimmick Street. Because it's definitely 316 Gimmick Street.
That's not where we live.
Oh, that's true.
Someone else lives there.
We're a couple blocks away from Stone Cold's house at 316 Gimmick Street.
At 316 Gimmick Street. Yeah, we're at 123 Gimmick Street.
But
we used to be at 123 Fake Street, Anytown, USA. But 5555.
Now Stone Cold has opened up a new studio next to his house, 317 Gimmick Street. Even though it would be an even numbered house if it was on the same side of the road. Here are our newest Patreon supporters. Steve Wilcox.
Thank you, Steve.
Dunstan Thorne.
Thank you, Dunstan.
Michael Costeva.
Thank you, Michael.
Or Costeva, possibly. And Marcelo Caldera.
Oh, thank you very much, Marcelo.
If you would like to be like any of them, those wonderful and special people, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax, kick in as little as $1 a month to help us keep this show going. Because of you, we do snack situation specials. We do 2 hour per month Every Story Ever specials. We got in the February one just under the wire. I had 22 minutes left in the month when I posted it. Ad-free episodes of all of our shows. Some of our Patreon supporters get bonus audio that nobody else gets to hear. They get line-stepping privileges on our various lists. They get some cool swag. It's going to be time to decide on this year's t-shirt in the very near future, once tax season is over, and other cool stuff. So if any of that sounds cool to you, head over to our Patreon and kick in a little bit. We would appreciate it. With that, Chris, it's time for Checks and Recs.
Hey, Matt, before we do that, I do want to clarify, if you want to come visit 123 Gimmick Street, is the studio? But Matt, as we all know, your house is at 420 Gimmick Street.
It's time for Checks and Recs. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
just to bring everybody up to speed, if you're a new listener, I get that generalized anxiety disorder. And I was talking to my doctor about that the other day, my head doctor.
Now you're talking about your doctor for your head, not like the chief doctor who oversees all your other doctors?
Right. No, that not the head, the HDIC, the head doctor in charge.
Right.
This is the doctor. This is the DH, which I believe is the technical name for a doctor of the head.
Just needed to clarify.
Yeah. Thank you. I see tonight's one of those nights where we're going to be doing bits at each other.
Like that's different from any other night.
Okay. But anyway, one of the things that really works is exercise. And I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, you don't need antidepressants. You just need a pair of running shoes. I have seen people say that. That's ridiculous. I assure you I am also on antidepressants. But exercise helps. It is nice to go somewhere and do something physical, especially since I spend, you know, so much time in my own head writing a condition you know quite well, Matt.
Yeah.
So I've been hitting the gym extra hard over the past couple weeks. Today, I was very frustrated with some things, so I went to the gym. The last couple of days, I spent a good 2.5 hours at the gym, which is not something I ever thought I would be doing. But I managed to deadlift 335 pounds, and I am very proud of myself. I know that that's not like that's not a huge amount. Also, the deadlift is generally a pretty easy lift. You just grab onto the bar and stand up. So I know like that's not a super huge amount, but it did make me feel good to accomplish that that little milestone of setting a new personal record. That the previous record I had for deadlift was 265. So I blew past that by 70 pounds today. I did actually, Matt, I did 315, and then I looked around to see if I could find a 1 pound weight. just to honor Steve Austin, whose ECW promo I was listening to at the time, because that's the thing I need to listen to every day sometimes.
Did you find that 1 pound weight?
No, the smallest weight I could find was 1.25 pounds, which would have added 2.5 pounds to the total weight. So I counted it. Like I instead of counting it at 315, I counted it to 316, and then I continued moving up in weights. So
I think that's a good policy. Yeah. Well, I have to say I am not a weightlifter, but I am very impressed with those numbers. Congrats and good on you.
Thank you. I've been working pretty darn hard at those. And you know what? If you are the kind of person for whom exercise is helpful, I would say maybe, you know, plug in your friends Chris and Matt and maybe go lift some heavy things or do some running, clear your head a little bit, because that is something that's very helpful to me. Matt, what is your check this week?
I have a few things to check in with. One is...
You know, a multi-check?
The old multi-check, but they're all small checks.
A mini multi-check?
There you go. First off, I've been doing homeowner stuff, homeowner update, and that includes noticing that my kitchen sink is a little bit loose.
Uh-oh.
My kitchen faucet, I should say, not the sink.
Okay. Because, you know, we once had the sink fall out of the counter.
Yeah, that's wild. That's a buck wild circumstance. But I've been watching YouTube videos to try to figure out how to tighten a kitchen faucet. And it seems like every kitchen faucet is made completely differently. There's no universal fix for a kitchen faucet. And so I got up under mine the other day, and it looked totally different from what's in those YouTube videos. And I genuinely have no idea how to tighten it. So this is kind of a listener request. If anybody out there knows plumbing at all, and specifically kitchen sinks, kitchen faucets, and how to tighten them, mine is one of the ones with the one knob that you turn to one side for hot and the other side for cold. If you can help me with this, I would greatly appreciate it. Please let me know. That is check number one.
Do you know the like make and model of your faucet?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and there's no way to find out?
I've looked all over it for a brand name. I cannot find it. I believe it might be a Moen, but I don't know. It's okay. One of the ones that has the little plastic thing under the knob that's like red on one side and blue on the other side, and you can pop that out.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the indicator for hot and cold, right? But you can also pop it out, and there's a screw, like a Allen screw in there. But that's only to tighten the knob itself. It's not to tighten the whole faucet, which is the part that's loose. Okay, that's that part. Second, quick reminder, Chris and I are both going to be at NC Comic Con Oak City.
That's in 2 weeks. That is going to be the 17th and 18th.
Of March.
Yes. Of March.
The following weekend, we are going to be at SC Comic Con in Greenville, South Carolina. So if you are nearby either of those places, in Raleigh or Greenville, come out and see us at those shows.
And Matt, let me tell you, whether it's Tokyo, Japan, Greensboro, North Carolina, Charlotte, Richmond, Atlanta, Charlotte, we'll be there.
That's right.
We defend our title as the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast.
Third thing and final thing, my life has become overcome with trivia. I talked last week.
Oh, Matt, I knew it was going to happen as soon as you went down the well of competing in underground secret trivia contests.
I talked last week about being in a secretive online trivia league. That continues. I currently have a record of 5-2. I lost my last game by 1 point. We got the same number of questions right, and I lost by 1 point. But I'm also this week, actually the day after this episode goes up on March 6th, I'm taking the Jeopardy test again.
Ooh.
By the way, did you watch Jeopardy today, Chris? There was a tie.
I did not watch Jeopardy today. I watched it yesterday because we actually had a conversation. It was relevant to Ajax because we were having a conversation about the Black Panther villain Achebe. Right. And we were unsure of the pronunciation, but we both figured it was the same as author Chinua Achebe. The, like, Trebek dropped the pronunciation on us, so I just texted you, context-free, Trebek says it's Achebe. So I was watching yesterday.
I've also heard Achebe from people who I would think would know, so I don't know if I trust Trebek on that one necessarily. That said, there was a tie on the show today, which was extremely exciting. One of the most extremely exciting endings of a Jeopardy I've seen in many years. But I am trying out again. I'm taking the test again. Play for me, everybody, as I go into this Jeopardy test. I want to audition again. I hope it happens. I will keep you updated. All right. Those are my mini checks.
Your many, Chris, mini checks.
My many, mini checks. Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
I do not know if I have anything to recommend this week, Matt. It's just stuff that I have talked about previously on the show. I did finally listen to all of Run the Jewels 3. I will credit that with pushing me over the top on the old gym sesh today.
That'll make you lift, for sure.
Really still enjoying Wolfenstein The Newest Order, which takes place on the moon. I've gotten to the moon. I have not found the wizard key. Is that only in the second one?
Yes, I only got the wizard key in the second one.
Okay.
And as my video demonstrates, you have to find the wizard key well before you meet the wizard.
Okay, well, did I meet the wizard already? Is he a secret wizard? Okay, I don't know. Like, anyway, I mentioned I've been a little frustrated lately, so I've been playing some Stardew Valley, which helps calm me down. It's all best of Rex right now,
I think. Yes. It's a retrospective.
Oh, Matt, that's so good. We should get a little loopy more often and come up with these great new bits for the show that are definitely going to stick around forever now.
Agreed.
Matt, since I am young and reckless, what is your rec?
My rec, Chris, is a British comedy series that I've been watching on Netflix that is very fun. If you're familiar with Matt Berry, who you may know from the IT Crowd. Before that, he was on Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, and he's been on a lot of other stuff. Over the last several years, he's had a series that he has written and starred in called Toast of London, in which he plays a struggling actor, an actor who thinks he's like a very big deal, who thinks he's very good, and he's at best like a C-list actor in London. He is, for instance, in a play that is considered to be, by every critic, the worst play in London history.
Okay.
The pilot episode is all about how the title of the play is never heard by us, the audience. Anytime anybody says it, some like loud sound effect drowns it out.
Okay.
It's very British sitcom-y in all the good ways and in all the bad ways. And I will cop to that very much. But Matt Berry is extremely funny. And I think it's a show that is very aware of its own silliness, goofiness, eccentricities, you know, how sitcom-y it does get at times. And I will also say, like, the pilot is probably the corniest episode of the whole thing. It gets a lot better after that. Like, once we've gotten to the second season, it's a whole different kind of thing. It's still like a silly sitcom and kind of a broad farce, but it's a little less, I don't know, like, you know, what you would kind of joke that a British sitcom is. Also, there is one catchphrase that I'm very fond of in the show, which is they keep doing this running gag where the lead character, Stephen Toast, goes to a recording studio and he has to do voiceover for, you know, whatever thing, like a commercial or like a cartoon or whatever thing he has to do voiceover for. And as he's doing the voiceover, the people in the booth will like hit the button and ask him to read it a different way. One of those characters is named Clem Fandango. And when he hits the button, he says, Steven, this is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me? And Steven Toast always replies, yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. And so, somehow it's funny every time to me. Like, how he's kind of annoyed about it, but he's answering politely. It's good.
If I was going to write a parody of a joke that I thought Matt Wilson would enjoy, I feel like that is what I would come up with if I really put some work into it.
So Toast of London is a fun time. I think I've only watched maybe through part of the second season. I believe there are three seasons up on Netflix. And like so many British comedies, I think it took like 6 years to make three seasons of 18 episodes.
Uh-huh. That sounds about right.
I cannot think about British sitcoms ever again without thinking about the Good Place joke about
such a good joke.
How whatever show they're watching, the show that Tahani wants to watch was on for what, 20 years? And over that time they managed to make 30 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
It's an excellent gag.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, boy.
I love that we have now made it a bit on the show that we are doing an impression of Kyle Starks that we heard in real life and was not recorded. Yeah, boy. Yeah, boy. Mwah, mwah.
He's a trendsetter, that Kyle Starks. All right, Chris. Yeah. Those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics of the week. Chris, Milk Wars has come to its stunning conclusion.
It certainly has.
In Doom Patrol Justice League number one, it calls back to the stories that came in the middle. Like, Cave Carson is in here. Wonder right. Woman is in here, referred to as Wonder Wife. Mm-hmm. We see Shade the Changing Girl. But at the same time, it is absolutely a direct sequel to the first issue of Milk Wars, which introduced the Retcon Corporation and Milkman Man and Final Heaven, where all of this takes place.
The Final Heaven is a Morrison thing. Final Heaven has been here before. I think the way that we need to judge Milk Wars, because The young animal books, to my knowledge, do not need any critical support. Like they are not getting, as far as I know, they sell pretty well. Right, like they're certainly successful on that front. But I think the question, like the reason we have crossovers like this is generally like if you are someone who reads Justice League, maybe you'd also like to read Doom Patrol or Shade or something along those lines. So I think the question that we have to answer and the question that we have to ask is, did this make us want to read Doom Patrol and Shade and all those books? And like all the
Mother Panic.
Mother Panic, yeah. And as someone who read the first couple issues of Doom Patrol and then kind of fell off and read the first couple issues of Cave Carson and hasn't read Shade or Mother Panic yet, this absolutely succeeded on that front. It absolutely made me want to read those books.
Agreed. I mean, I'd already been reading Doom Patrol. What I found interesting about this, well, it was a few different things. One is how it brought back all the Lord MangaCon stuff after sort of leaving that behind after the first issue of this. Like, it continues that story. Two is how much it felt like another take on Final Crisis, which is funny because that's also happening in Metal right now.
And kind of continuing into another book that we're going to talk about this week. But yeah, like, that's... Who knew? Who knew? Who knew it would only take, like, 10 years? And all of a sudden people would be like, yeah, Final Crisis, that's where it's at.
We're going to do our retelling of Final Crisis.
What if we get as many retellings of Final Crisis as we got of Crisis on Infinite Earths? Because I'm here for it.
I mean, it's kind of happening. So I found that to be interesting. And also, like, how the outcome of this feels like a change, even though I'm not necessarily sure it's a change. Because up to this point, I'm not sure if the young animal books, with I guess Mother Panic was to a degree, because I think Batman appeared in it, because it took place in Gotham City.
Right.
But it sort of separates all the non-Doom Patrol young animal books into their own pocket universes. But it brings Doom Patrol into the DC universe by the end of the book.
Yeah, which is really weird. That was the part that I didn't quite get. Because I feel like the thing that I would have wanted as a reader is for all this stuff to just be happening in the DC universe. You know, like I want a DC universe that has room for Mother Panic, for Shade, for the Doom Patrol, for Cave Carson, that version of Wild Dog, which I, you know, obviously there's Wild Dogs on TV right now. So presumably they might want to go ahead and have a DC universe version of Wild Dog. But like, there's nothing that says that dude isn't the DC Universe version of Wild Dog. He just cusses.
Right. The other big change, of course, is that Robot Man's a dude now.
Yes.
Which is an interesting take. I mean, all the Robot Man stuff in here is really interesting. Like, the whole idea that he was just plucked out of fan fiction. This yes. version of Cliff Seal is just plucked out of fan fiction. So much of the Rita Farr stuff from the previous issue, from the Cave Carson issue, is in here. I may be misreading the stuff about them being in a different universe, but the thing that sort of clues me into it is the Mother Panic panel in one of the last pages, where Mother Panic is saying, "This is not the Gotham City I know. I don't feel the shadow anymore."
Yeah.
That seems to be saying this is a different Gotham City.
It seems to be saying it's a Gotham City without Batman, which is wild.
Yeah.
That there is a Gotham City out there in the new non-dark multiverse that just doesn't have Batman in it, and instead it has Mother Panic. Like, that raises the question of why even be in Gotham City. But I mean, like, I'm interested to find out, and I'm interested to see where it goes.
Also, notably, the Cave Carson panel doesn't have Wild Dog in it.
Oh. That's what's up, shitheads.
What's up, shitheads?
What's up, shitheads is like the best. It's so good.
Even if we do or don't like sort of how things end up shaking out as far as where these characters are in their particular books, Milk Wars was, to me, an unabashed success.
For sure.
All these weird high concepts coming together into a cohesive story.
Oh, and don't forget the 2018 Ultra the Multi-Alien showing up.
Yeah, and also the the idea that we're going one step above Muscle Mystery into Inflation Intensity.
Okay, that was the weirdest. That one, nothing in the entirety of Metal has been quite as weird as a double page spread of the Justice League as Inflation Art.
Yeah, as like Mario when he gets the pee balloon.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go for it. But you know, we've all been on DeviantArt. We know what's up. We know what's out there. That was bonkers.
Yeah, how do you think Gerard Way and Steve Orlando scripted that for Dale Eagle Sham to draw?
I would not be surprised if the phrase "like Mario when he gets the pee balloon."
Yeah, I mean that is the best way to describe it.
It's weird stuff.
I mean, that is followed immediately by Rita Farr waking up from her extended crucifixion and her being made out of milk and her being in everything.
Yeah, because she can shrink and expand, so she's the entire universe.
So she's the entire universe, and then she puts the different characters in their various places.
We've talked about Final Crisis and how I'm always frustrated with readers who were like, I didn't understand Final Crisis, because I think Final Crisis is a very straightforward story at the heart of it. But I'm not sure I understood the events of Milk Wars. I might have to go and do like a second read through just to make sure I get everything, but like there are things that happened in that comic that I'm very unsure if I've got them right. Inflation Intensity, for one thing, I missed that it was one step beyond Muscle Mystery. I did know about Batman going, we don't need the truth, we need a mystery. Muscle Mystery.
And then Flex Metallo says, look, Muscle Mystery, you know, I'm just a tough guy, but there's one thing I've never tried, and that's Inflation Intensity.
That's so bonkers. I mean, I love it. Do not get me wrong. But yeah, like, I feel like...
Okay, we have talked about... This comic is so bonkers, we haven't even talked about how Retcon Corp has its own version of the Ultimate Nullifier.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It sure does.
Called the Final Refresh Button.
Uh-huh. They're going to reboot it. They're going to reboot everything.
It even looks like the Ultimate Nullifier.
It is like, can we run this by legal and make sure? No, like Milk Wars, super weird, challenging in a way that I didn't expect it to be, but also like not to the exclusion of enjoyment. Like in the way that I worry that like Metal is incomprehensible to someone who was not reading DC Comics since 1997, I feel like Milk Wars was super accessible and also managed to be the perfect kind of bizarre, the perfect kind of accessible.
Yeah, it's accessible. It's just weird.
Yeah.
If you can buy into weird, you will like Milk Wars.
Yeah. Also, we did hear from a reader who said they were a very new reader who was still really enjoying Metal. So we've solved that Muscle Mystery.
With Inflation Intensity. Okay. Let's talk next about the final issue of Gwenpool, number 25.
Chris Hastings and Guri Hiru putting the finishing touches on Gwenpool. And it's a comic that got me. man. It's a comic that that made me tear up just a little bit while I was reading it, because there's a part in there, and Gwenpool has been incredibly good since day one, but with number 16 and the kind of playing with the format stuff and the idea that while Gwen has always known that she's in a Marvel comic book, like the way that they've started playing with that, it's gotten like really good and really intense in some really interesting ways. And this one plays with that idea. Like at one point she gets like a countdown clock of how many pages she has left as she's trying to wrap up all these subplots. It's been so good. And getting to finish it this way was really fun, especially the part where she goes down to hell to rescue her brother from Mephisto with the help of Squirrel Girl. And then she's like, yeah, it's really weird how the devil 100% exists in this world, and yet heroes aren't just down here beating up the devil all the time to stop evil. And like Squirrel Girl in the background of those panels is like, hang on. And like there's very much a, is Squirrel Girl just gonna fight the devil now? Question. And that's that Marvel Universe shit that I love.
Yeah.
It is a note perfect ending to what has been, honestly, I cannot think of a better Marvel comic from the past 2 years, including the ones I have co-written. Just such a good, good book. And if anyone out there has not read it, get on that. Like, and there's a page in this that I won't spoil, but there's a page where when you hit it, and it's you know, a couple months from now, a couple weeks from now, that you're gonna understand why I thought this book was so special. And just absolutely worth picking up, 100%.
From an end to a beginning, next up, Chris, let's talk about The Terrifics number one, which, you know, we've talked about some of the other books in this line, this new DC Age of Heroes line, but I think definitely the one we were waiting for with bated breath was this DC Comics take on the Fantastic Four. And how fucking Fantastic Four did this book feel?
I had forgotten that it was Phantom Girl, that they were going to have Phantom Girl instead of the Invisible Woman, which is genuinely hilarious to me. But yeah, like, it's super Fantastic Four, but it's also, this is another one that's, look, I love continuity heavy comics, right? And I know that you do too. I love comics that take place in the capital letter DC universe, you know, the Marvel universe. I love them.
Yeah.
This book is like, it's so very DC universe. Well, there's stuff about metal in here. There's stuff about Metamorpho.
Are you talking about how Simon Stagg opened a portal to the dark universes?
Oh, the dark multiverse? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Matt, I'm talking about Simon Stagg, and you could have stopped there.
But what I love about it is the dark multiverse, as defined by this book, is basically just the negative zone. They go to the negative zone.
They go to the negative zone, and they basically see Annihilus's body.
It's Annihilus's body, but like with a super Galactus ass design.
Yeah, but you know, and it's the size of a Celestial.
Yeah,
so it's all the Jack Kirby stuff you love. It's all the Jack Kirby stuff I love for sure. At this, like, I simultaneously feel like maybe there was too much getting the team together and not enough getting the team together in this book. You know, like that's my one big problem with it, is that we spend some time being like, okay, this is Metamorpho, this is Simon Stagg, this is Sapphire Stagg, this is Mr. Terrific, this is why Mr. Terrific's here, this is what Plastic Man's doing here, and that explanation is somebody needs to call Nick Cannon because it is wilding out.
You talk about how he's a comatose egg?
Yeah, I'm talking about how he got turned into an egg by the touch of the Dark Multiverse. But if you put him in the Dark Multiverse a second time, he can turn back from an egg.
He wakes up, yeah.
Yeah. It seems to end very abruptly, and I feel like there's a lot of establishing why the characters are here, but it sort of expects you to know what Mr. Terrific Steel is, like what Begitzel is. Like, if you don't know what Begitzel is, I feel like maybe you will be lost in this. If you don't know the significance of you know, the Watso family. Yeah, go ahead.
I also get the sense, though, that we are tacitly told we'll get to it. Because Plastic Man doesn't know what Begitzel is either. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's in Eastern Europe or something.
You know what this reminded me of, like, honestly, more than anything?
What's that?
The first arc of Batman and the Outsiders?
Okay.
Like, where Batman gets his new team together and they all go to Markovia? Like, it is very much structurally similar to that, I feel, which you don't expect from a comic in 2018. You know, like, it's something that you would expect from a comic from 1980, but getting it in a very, very modern comic is maybe a little jarring and maybe a little unexpected. Which, again, like, I'm the audience for it, right? Like we know all about Begitzel and the Watso family and Java and
Simon Stagg.
Simon Stagg and Mr. Terrific and Tom Strong. Because, oh yeah, Tom Strong shows up at the end. Which I wish we had known 3 months ago, you know?
The Tom Strong thing does come pretty abruptly, but I do feel like it is a twist that comes after what I think a lot of comics readers will see as a book where you kind of feel like, okay, I know what this is. Because this book isn't just like a Fantastic Four riff. It even goes to the point of probably with the exception of this version of the Invisible Girl, everybody else feeling very much like their Fantastic Four counterparts. Mm-hmm. Like Metamorpho here is even talking kind of like Ben Grimm, you know?
Yeah.
More than I remember Metamorpho talking like Ben Grimm before.
I mean, he generally talks like Ben Grimm as written by Bob Haney.
Yeah.
Because all Bob Haney characters kind of sound the same. Like, even Batman is like, Blue Blazes, let's highball it to the Sunshine State.
But, you know, Mr. Terrific is very much the Reed Richards.
You mean Mr. Terrific is very much the Mr. Fantastic?
Yes, and Plastic Man is very much the Human Torch. He's just stretchy instead of on fire. Like, the powers are not one-to-one, but the characteristics very much are. Like, it's not subtle about this being a Fantastic Four thing. So
not
I don't,
in the least.
I don't know how much there needed to be, like, a lot more setup. And so I'm cool in the Tom Strong thing happening at the end where it's like, okay, this isn't exactly what you thought.
I think this is a book that is going to – this first arc is going to read better in paperback, which it, I think if there's a flaw in Jeff Lemire's writing, which is like generally pretty top-notch, it's that the pacing of the stories and the way he doles out information seems a little weird when you're going month to month. It always comes together in a way that I think pays off really well. But month to month, it feels odd, even when it's not.
There's a deliberateness to it. I don't want to say decompressed, but it's deliberate. And probably my main complaint about this issue is that Phantom Girl basically gets nothing to do.
Very little, other than to be like, yep, I'm from Begitzel.
Honestly, does make her a lot like early Invisible Girl.
Do you think there's going to be an issue where we get a letter about her and then they talk about how Abraham Lincoln had a mother? not the finest moment of the Marvel Universe.
But I'm interested to see where the Tom Strong stuff goes. And even though I was very deeply hoping for Doc Shaner art on this series, mm-hmm. the Ivan Rice art is quite good. It looks quite nice. Apparently, we're never going to get Doc Shaner art on this series, as was maybe originally promised, because he's going to be drawing Superman now.
I mean, like, I feel like that's probably a trade we can all accept.
Yeah, I certainly can. But
would I like to see Doc Shaner draw this Metamorpho comic? Absolutely. Would I also like to see Doc Shader draw Superman? Yeah, probably. I think so.
I think I probably want to see Superman more, but I'm not disappointed in the Ivan Reis art, or Reese. I never know which one to say.
It's Reis, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, I will continue reading this book. I'm enjoying it a lot in the absence of a proper Fantastic Four book. So,
I mean, it is great time for DC to strike that particular iron.
With that, we're going to wrap up our comic segment. And Chris, we're going to dive into our interview segment with Kelly Dale.
Yeah, this will be a good one. Joining us for the program this week, I am very happy to welcome someone that I've known for quite a long time. She is behind the current Kickstarter campaign, which ends this week. So even before this interview is over, get out there and back this Kickstarter campaign immediately. It is to collect and complete Skyward. It is the Skyward Omnibus. Kelly Dale is here. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And that was a delightful opening.
Hey, I've been at this for quite a while.
It seems like you have, so kudos to you.
How are you? Because we, as I mentioned, we actually know each other in real life. You are one of the the few people in comics that I actually met in real life first. Like, we did not become friends online.
When was the first time you met me and Jeremy?
Well, you were in Columbia. And it was when I was working at Heroes and Dragons, down in the comic shop that died and then came back.
I feel like we've known you so much longer. In a good way, of course.
But I mean, that would have been, it would have been 10 or 12 years ago, at least. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I still have my Seamus picture you drew for me.
Oh my gosh, that's right. You got me to draw wrestlers for you. I'm very proud of that, Seamus. It was minimalist. I remember it.
I'm going to see. Like, I know I have it. I'm going to see it. I'll have to send you a picture of it.
Well, speaking of art, and speaking of art that we hang on to, every week when we record War Rocket Ajax, I sit at this desk and literally hanging the picture that is directly over my computer every week when we record is a piece of art that I got from Jeremy back in 2008, so 10 years ago.
Oh my goodness. What piece is it?
Oh, it's. I mean, look, it's a Baroness, obviously.
That would be my first guess for you.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got that one. I have a couple of his, but it's it's a thing that I see every time I come into my office and sit down to work.
Nice.
And it's made me so happy to know that you are out there collecting Skyward. But for people who did not have the good fortune to work at a comic book store where you and Jeremy were shopping 15 years ago, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Jeremy and a little bit about Skyward?
Of course. So if you don't know, Jeremy was a comic book artist, best known pretty much for G.I. Joe. But then he started doing his creator-owned work, Skyward, as Chris is saying. And Skyward is one of those action fantasy adventures, kind of in the same vein as like a Legend of Zelda, where it's an all ages appropriate. And it's this high epic adventure about a boy and his dog trying to unite the land against the armies of the Brother Kings. And it's not written down to kids, but it's awesome because you can actually read it and then give it to a kid and they'll appreciate it too. Jeremy really wanted his comic to have that feel of like the 1980s where you could just pick up a comic and parents didn't have to worry about what was in it. It was going to be some grand adventure. Jeremy himself, so he has always wanted to be a comic artist. Well, I take that back. Until he was about 5 years old, he wanted to be the catcher for the Cubs. And then he realized they probably would never win. So he decided to be a comic book artist instead. And he devoted the rest of his life to comics and drawing and just his passion for it. And if you ever had a chance to meet him, you could definitely see the passion, like right off the bat. Unfortunately, Jeremy passed away in 2014 unfortunately, it was before he ever saw his Cubs make it to the World Series. So that's one of, I feel like, a true regret is that he never actually got to see that. But we did get to go to the Cubs' 100th actual thing in at Wrigley. So we got to actually go to there for their 100th. So that was cool. But Jeremy was, I mean, you can ask anybody who knew him, just about anybody in the comic industry. He was a great, great artist, great guy, just always pleasant, so eager to talk about not just Skyward, but comics in general. Super friendly. And you could just see that Skyward was his passion.
I have talked before about how when I was working at the store, I was very rarely sleeping. I was you know, writing until 2 or 3 in the morning every night, and then getting up at 8 to go to work. And Jeremy was still like a customer and a person that I looked forward to talking to, which I think should give people an idea. Like, if even me at my crabbiest was excited to see Jeremy, like I think that can tell you what a great guy he was, and genuinely the nicest guy in comics that I think I've ever met in my life. And he was the kind of nice guy who, even if his comics were bad, you would have been like, oh, you know, it's Jeremy, he's great. Like, he's a great guy. But astoundingly, kind of against all odds, his comics were also amazing.
Yeah.
I loved the stuff that he was doing on G.I. Joe. He did some of the pack-in comics that, you know, are really fun that he did with Larry Hama.
That was the 25th anniversary. That it was so cool because his comics actually fit in between the Larry Hama stories from the 80s. Mm-hmm. So Larry actually wrote additional stories then, and Jeremy got to illustrate a handful of them. They were supposed to fit into the actual mythos of the 80s. So that was really cool.
Yeah, so they'd be like it's like number 51B or 51A or something like that. I know that did he do the Silent Issue?
Yes, sequel? He did.
Yeah, that one is really awesome.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that stuff's great, but I already like G.I. Joe. And then I remember reading Skyward for the first time. And if you're a longtime listener of War Rocket Ajax, you may remember that we did have Jeremy on the show ages ago.
Yeah, it was like, 2013?
Yeah, it was about 5 years ago, back in 2013. And, you know, I talked then about how much I really loved that comic. And one of the things that's really interesting about this Kickstarter, though, is that Skyward was unfortunately left uncompleted.
Yeah. So Jeremy created Skyward to be an ongoing series. He did not want a limited. I mean, his grandiose plan, he wanted to rival Eric Larson with Savage Dragon with how many issues he could get out. He had it plotted up to, like, issue 50. And issue 9 is where with the last issue he brought out before he passed away, and he left it on such a cliffhanger. I tell you, like, I still have fans contacting me going, who is behind the mask?
and so, like, part of the Kickstarter campaign isn't just to collect the existing 9 issues, but to actually do a 10th one that'll wrap up that story, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I took what he wanted for issue 10, and then I sat down with Barbara Kessel, since her writing style, especially on Meridian, is very similar to Jeremy's. Mm-hmm. So that way it would still have the same feel. And we figured out how to kind of like answer a bunch of questions that Jeremy had open, reveal who's behind the mask. But also I figured out a way to kind of add closure without truly ending the series. So that way true fans can kind of imagine their own additional stories because you know they're out there. Mm-hmm. But it allows some closure for the fans. And issue 10 can be like a 32-page issue. So yeah, the Omnibus will have issues 1 through 9 plus issue 10 plus all the covers, all the variant covers. Jeremy had variant covers from so many artists, like Phil Noto and Stefan Rue and Gene Ha, Tom Zoller, Darwin Cook. And some of those had never seen the light of day because, again, he had this plotted out to issue 50. So all of those extras are going to be in there as well. Plus, like, behind the scenes, like, artwork and things like that. Some of his blue line things, some of his world building pieces that nobody's ever seen before. So I'm trying to really do right by him.
I am curious, you know, like talking about how he had it plotted out so far in advance, like, is there a desire on your part to see it continue, or is this going to be like the complete Skyward as we know it?
That's a great question, actually. Truthfully, I would love to see more with Skyward because I know what he wanted to do with it. I know where he wanted it to go. But the problem is, after this issue 10, anything past this is not going to be his.
Yeah.
And I never want it to be a situation where somebody goes, oh, this isn't as good as Jeremy's, or this is better than Jeremy's. So if I decided to do anything else Skyward, which there's always a possibility, I would have to, I feel like I would have to take it to a different medium. So taking it to, say, cartoons or something like that, I feel would be more appropriate. I just feel like I can't do justice to him by continuing the series in his medium.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing that I hadn't even thought of, because you hear about, you know, like the desire to do more than Eric Larson has done on Savage Dragon, which is 300 now? Is it
300 issues? Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite a bit. That's a tall order for anyone. You know, then you hear about people like when Bright Gave On and Adrian Alfona and Christina Strain launched Runaways, like it's a book they wanted to be part of the Marvel Universe forever. Like they wanted other people to pick it up. So right. It's always this weird feeling when something like that is left not finished the way any of us wish it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all just want more of it, because it is a series that I picked it up from Jeremy at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good and so fun, and it's really honestly like influenced the way that I approach comics. And when I sit down and write stuff on my own, it's usually trying to do that all ages adventure style that he did so well, and that, you know, stuff like the Karl Barks Duck comics do so well. Well, I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see it all finish in this form.
Mm-hmm. Well, and did you hear Shannon Gallant is actually, who's another G.I. Joe artist.
Yes.
Actually drew the entire thing. All 32 pages. I love Shannon. He is amazing. I actually originally had it planned where I was going to have a bunch of different artists do, because Jeremy would, as you know, do the Skyward each issue almost in little chapters. Mm-hmm. So you'd have like a 20-page single issue, but there was like three chapters in it. So you had three different groups of people that you're following. And he just did it so smoothly. It never felt like it was too much, you know? So I was going to have like each little chapter of issue 10 done by a different artist. But seriously, everybody's schedule was crazy. And then San Diego came up, and then, you know, this another show. So everybody was just so busy. I finally touched base with Shannon, and Shannon had done a couple pages already. And we talked, and he was like, I'll just do it.
Which I think that's bold for anyone except him. Like, to just be like, yeah, I could knock that out.
Right.
Like, probably one of the most underrated artists in comics right now.
Oh my god,
just incredible work from him every time I see his stuff.
Since I'm not Jeremy, I heard all the stories that he and Shannon had to deal with in terms of things like G.I. Joe, but I'm not tied to anybody. I don't have to have that same level of professionalism. But some of the things that Jeremy and Shannon as well have had to endure working with G.I. Joe, it's unbelievable that Shannon is not, to me, more like well-known as he is. I mean, if you just look at how technical like some of his weapons and machinery happens to be, I remember a lot of choice words when Jeremy had to draw some of those machines.
I'm not surprised.
Right. Well, and of course, Larry truly understanding the military, you know, everything had to be correct and right. And it is important. It's G.I. Joe, right? Mm-hmm. But like I said, there was many a choice words in regards to some of these pages. So Jeremy, part of the reason he decided to Skyward in this world that he created with lots of trees was so he doesn't have to draw any more freaking buildings.
That's when an artist needs to sit down and be like, I'm going to do a book about peacocks riding bicycles.
Right.
and there's technology everywhere.
Robo peacocks riding bicycles.
I genuinely count, like, one of my biggest regrets at a con is not getting a page from Shannon Gallant when we saw him at HeroesCon a couple years ago, because it was a Destro page, and he had, like, it was Destro firing wrist rockets straight at the reader, but they were like 100 wrist rockets. Like, it was so many.
Right. Yeah. Shannon, and he doesn't like take it and just like draw one and then in Photoshop copy and paste more. No, he hand draws everything. Yeah, this man is one. A beast. I love him.
Yeah, it's he's,
well, why don't you just contact him and see if he still has his page?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't, because I'm pretty sure I would have bought it if he had still had it. I think he sold it while I was dithering over whether or not I should buy it. But of course,
if you want to reach out, I'll touch base with him and see if he's, if just in case, would you like me to?
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Okay, yeah. I will. I'll touch base and see if he still has that one. Do you remember what issue?
Nope.
Okay. I'll just tell him it's the one with Destro firing a buttload of.
It's a page with Destro on it. I'm sure he doesn't have a million of those laying around. But honestly, I cannot think of a better artist pick up that book and to finish it. You know, someone who knew Jeremy, someone who was familiar with his style, like someone who's also like incredibly good. It's very exciting to know that is happening.
Right. And I agree. And Shannon, like I said, he was just amazing. And oh my goodness, I can't wait for you to see the pages. The Skyward pages look awesome. He really did a great job holding true. I mean, it's still his style, but he held true to the feel that Jeremy had. Mm-hmm. And with his stuff and with Catherine Lano's and Laura Martin's colors over it, oh my goodness. Oh,
wow. Yeah, that's a team.
Right. Right.
So you've mentioned on the Kickstarter page, and we should say now, for anyone who is listening to this like on the way to work or at the gym and you haven't had a chance to go to Kickstarter.com and look for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. It's completely funded. It's absolutely going to happen. Your plan is to have it out by HeroesCon.
Yep, that's
Jeremy's favorite show and mine and Matt's.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you to see that art come in and see this story like finishing up in that way?
It's kind of bittersweet. Like, I'm super excited because, again, having the words and the script on paper and then seeing the actual translation to the actual pages is awesome. I'm so happy because I feel like this is – Skyward was kind of Jeremy's love letter to comics. That's why there's, like, all these references and paying homage to things like Usagio Jumbo and lots of stuff from the 80s, Telos and things like that, Legends of Zelda. He had – all these different like homages throughout the whole thing. And because that was like his love letter, I feel like this is now our love letter to him. It's kind of like a farewell, a final goodbye. It allows closure, I feel like, for not just me, but for fans. And yeah, it's bittersweet. Like, I'm excited to see, and I can't wait for everybody to actually see it. I want everybody to get this omnibus. Not because I want lots and lots of money, but because I want everybody to have it because it's that good. And I'm just really hoping that everybody that could possibly want this book has a chance to grab it.
Yeah, I cannot think of a better way to think about this book than being, you know, comics as a community getting together to write the love letter back to Jeremy that he did with comics for his entire life. Like, that's a really great way of looking at it, and something that I am going to be incredibly proud to be a part of when we get this. The book itself, you can get at the $50 level, mm-hmm. which honestly, it's a 250 page full color collection.
Well, it's going to probably be more than 250 pages. Yeah.
That's
because I've got people actually asking if they can be in it, so they're like sending me fan art and stuff. Oh, like,
wow,
that
that's
too.
Awesome. Can you mm-hmm. can you tell me anyone that you've gotten that I might know?
I've got a handful of stuff. A lot of it is more like some friends, like Nate Lovett, Chris Pierce.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, there's like, and then I've got a handful of like fans. Like I've got a couple, I think, kid drawings.
Oh, that's awesome.
That, fans of Skyward had done their own little stuff and sent them to Jeremy. And so I've got like a whole bunch of things. So I'll actually say that now too, here on the podcast, if you want to be a part of it, then, I'll make sure Chris has my email and send me whatever you would like. And as long as it's Skyward and it's appropriate, because again, we're sticking with this whole, you know, all ages.
It's an all ages book.
Right.
I mean, if you are willing to let us put your email address on warrocketajax.com when this episode goes up, then we will absolutely get people in contact with you.
Exactly. I will be happy to put it in the book. And Chris, that means you too. If you want to get a Skyward thing, I mean, you had an awesome Seamus that you drew for me.
Listen. do not shame me in this way.
I love that piece because it was that white square or rectangle piece of paper, and all you did was draw his like eyes, a little bit of red at the top, and then his mustache and like goatee thing.
I drew grumpy eyes. I drew a jagged red line for hair, a upside down like red U for his mustache that he had at the time.
And the paper was so white. You're like, look, it matches.
all right, look, I will say right now on the show, I will try to do something, but that's so much pressure. Kelly, I'm not kidding. I literally sit under his art every time I sit down to work.
Well, draw one of the rabbites,
okay.
Which if you are new to Skyward, the rabbites are these like gladiator, you know, this is Sparta, giant bunnies. And my favorite is the little chubby one whose little gladiator like breastplate doesn't fit and it's like his little belly's hanging out. That one's my favorite.
So if there's anybody out there who is on the fence about picking up Skyward, if they're like, oh, you know, 50 bucks is a lot even for that size of book, and they don't listen to me. I don't know why they're even listening to this if they're not taking my word on it. But is there a particular scene that you like, because I'm sure you've in putting this together, you haven't just gone and done the 10th issue with Barbara Kessel, but I'm like, mm-hmm. you've gone back through the whole thing. I'm sure. Like, is there a particular moment that sticks out for you as being a, like this is what Skyward is?
There's so many great moments because there's so many great iconic characters that Jeremy created. I mean, and again, it's something for everybody. Like, again, if you like giant bunnies that are like awesome that can kick your butt, rabbites. I mean, if you like that handsome prince, there's one of those in there. The strong-willed strong woman archer, she's in there. The boy and his dog, you know, there's even an elf that rides on a giant bird. It's awesome. But especially if you're into elves. But I think to me, the most iconic picture, Jeremy, actually, it was in issue 3, I think it's like page 12 or something. It's a picture, it's a full page spread, and it shows Jack, which is the dog, and Quinn, the little boy, and the boy is hugging the dog because some stuff happened in issue 1 that's kind of tragic, but it's like everything that has happened up to that moment in issue 3. Kind of all catches up to him at the same time. And you could just see the emotion both in his face and the dog's. And to me, it's one of the most beautiful pieces. And Jeremy actually used that as the cover for the first trade.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly the page you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually in some of the incentives that I have on the Kickstarter, I'm going to be giving that away as part of the incentive as a print.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's and to me, again, that doesn't necessarily show, because Skyward is, there's so much hope in the entire story. Even though this tragedy falls, there's all this like hope and good conquering evil and things like that. So the little boy looking sad with hugging the dog is not necessarily a full thing about Skyward itself, but it's such an iconic, it like just moves you when you see it.
It really does. It's not the tone of the story, but it is like a amazing page in its own right. And you know, like the name of the book is Skyward. You know, like that's the direction that the story moves in. In a way that I really like. And just to throw it back to when we had Jeremy on the show back in 2013, I just think it's hilarious the way he draws that dog's butthole all the time. It's
any animals
never stops being hilarious to me.
Right, the warthog in the first issue has a little butthole.
There's so many. They're all over the place.
Did you ever notice also that in the background, the dog's always looking at things? Like, the dog is kind of doing his own thing almost the entire series, like, in the background. And there's a frickin' squirrel in, like, every single issue somewhere that's messing with the dog. Now you're going to go back and look. You'll see him.
I can't wait to go back and reread this. What has your experience been like as a publisher, as you know, putting together a team to do the book and the art, getting the Kickstarter going? Like, that's, you know, we've done Kickstarters here on Work at Ajax. Matt has done Kickstarters for comics, but as a publisher putting together something like this that has existing content and new content, like, what was that like for you?
Oh God, it's like a second job. I mean, in a good way, of course. But I've got all the components at this point, or just about. Catherine is finishing up her pages, and Laura's going to be finishing up her pages soon. So, I mean, truthfully, issue 10 is almost done. Tom Zoller is actually doing the lettering, and I've actually asked Tom, because Tom is the one that does the Baltimore yearbooks. Mm-hmm. He puts all that together, and he's put things together before.
And our listeners might know Tom. He's been on the show before. He's the creator of Love and Capes, a super good guy, super good comic, like, very talented.
Have you seen his new one, Warning Label?
Oh, no, I haven't gotten that yet.
Okay, I'm going to send you the link. It is in... Oh my goodness, it's great. It's such a Tom thing. I love
it. It's unsurprising. Tom is a top-notch creator.
Oh, heck yeah. So I've asked him very nicely if he will maybe come down to Atlanta and hang out with me for a day or so. And I want to say that he would help me put the omnibus together. What's going to actually happen is I'm thinking he's going to probably put it together and I'll help him. Because I don't really know exactly how to do this to make sure it's correct. So that's why I'm going to bring in the big guns and make sure it's done correctly.
Well, I think a really great part of this story is that you, even as someone who is putting together this massive project, like, you are surrounded by an incredible team. I mean, like, Laura Martin are arguably the best colorist working, you know, like, yeah. Like, she's the one they got to, you know, Dave Stevens' handpicked colorist for when they did the Rocketeer collection. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Tom, who has so much experience putting together books and doing really, like, if anyone's picked up his Love and Cape stuff, it's the production values on those are always, like, great, like, noticeably great.
Yeah, I mean, again, another great, like you said, great, fabulous creator. His writing is phenomenal. His artwork is so much fun. And like I said, he's put a lot of stuff together where it's been, like, weird content, you know, doing the yearbooks. Here's a random picture. Here's a random picture. Trying to get it all organized. He's done that before. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I haven't. And again, I want to make sure that I do right for Jeremy and for the omnibus. So, well, Tom, if you're listening, I can't wait to have you come down.
Well, it sounds like you are more than on the right track as far as that goes. I'm really excited. I guess the next question is, like, this is obviously a labor of love. And it's something that I'm really excited about because of that. But do you think that this is a role in comics that you would like to continue with? Like, or is this it? Is this just the project for you?
At the moment, I think this will be it for now. I mean, I'll be more than happy to help anybody if they need it, especially since everybody is such an outpouring love and support. Then I certainly want to reciprocate that as anytime I can. But I used to do a lot of this type of stuff for Jeremy, other than actually putting it together. Usually he would finish pages and then he would be like, okay, you know, I need you to scan these in and I need you to, you know, set them up for the colorist or for Tom or for whatever. So I remember doing a lot of this stuff. And as I've been redoing all this stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. And it is, it's kind of fun to kind of go back and do it, but I'm not sure if I'd want to do it like as a full-time basis. Mainly, like I said, I'm not giving up comics by any means, but after Heroes, cause my plan is to be at Heroes this year at Heroes Con. I emailed Sheldon and stuff, but I haven't heard back from him yet. I kind of need to actually get a table. So that's still on the docket. But after this time at Heroes, I probably won't be behind the table anymore. So it's like my position in comics will be different from here on out. And that's kind of weird because for the last 11 years, I have always been behind the table. So I think I'm going to embrace that for a little while and kind of see where it goes. But like I said, I'm not giving up comics. So being maybe working with editorial publisher, something like that in the future is always a possibility.
Look, we'll do what we can to get you on a Firestar book. How about that?
I will take that in a heartbeat. Hey, you actually brought in Firestar.
Again, super in joke. Your favorite character, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I love Firestar. She's my girl.
Well, Kelly, it has been absolutely delightful to talk to you. We should say the Kickstarter ends on March 8th.
March 8th.
So if you are listening to this the day that it goes up, or a couple days after, you have only a few days, but absolutely get in there and back this. It's the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus Kickstarter. $50 will get you a copy of this book. I will personally guarantee that it's worth it. I am literally putting my money on it right now. Kelly, it has been absolutely wonderful to talk to you and catch up.
You too. Oh, before we go, may I ask you something? I've got a bunch of different like incentives, hopefully at a variety of different price points, right? So hopefully it'll be something for everyone. There's original art. There's the actual issues, single issues of Skyward. My goal right now is I want to hit the stretch goal of 26,000 because then I can bring out the single issue of issue 10 for the collection.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So my goal, right? So I want to try to hit that. And could I put up an incentive that if I give you, Chris, a sketch cover, that if somebody gets this, and I'll only do one, but if somebody gets this sketch cover, that you will at a show do a sketch for them?
Absolutely. I am there for it. And of course, I will also be at Heroes, so I'll see you there.
I can't wait to see you. So if I do that, I'll also ask you this. What price do you want me to put that incentive
on? $400.
I will No. I will put it on.
You pick the price. I guarantee you my art will not be worth whatever you put on it. But I will try so hard.
Well, for all of your listeners out there, they will get one of the super, super rare Chris sketches.
I will be happy to do it. It is awesome. The least I can do. For you, you've always been, again, like one of the nicest people in comics, someone that I'm always happy to see. Jeremy, legitimately a great, great artist, great, great guy whose absence is felt. Like every time I go to Heroes Con, which is, you know, the show that I look forward to all year, every time I step on the floor of that show since he passed away, it is a noticeable absence, even year after years. Anything I can do to help the Skyward Omnibus happen, I will absolutely do.
Sounds good. And I promise, like I said, I only put up one. So you won't have to do a whole bunch of them, okay?
Okay. Okay. Well, our guest has been Kelly Dale. The Kickstarter is for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus, featuring new work from Barbara Kessel, Shannon Gallant, Laura Martin. Incredible stuff. Thank you so much for being here, and good luck getting that stretch goal, because the Kickstarter is already successful. It has already happened.
The omnibus is coming out, and everybody that has already backed it will be getting it again. As long as printing goes the way it should, I'm going to be mailing everything out at least by July. If you happen to be at Heroes, you can always pick it up there if you want.
All right. Now, is there anywhere else that our listeners can find you if you would like to be found?
Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook as well. And it's just Kelly Dale. I'm super fancy like that. And you'll know which one is me because I'm going to be the one that's posting all about Skyward for the next handful of days. There's going to be no, I mean, that's all I'm posting is about the omnibus.
All right. Well, Kelly Dale, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for doing this project because I have not been as excited to get my hands on a hardcover for quite some time.
Awesome. Well, I'm doing it for people like you.
Thanks once again to Kelly Dale for joining us. Absolutely go check out the Skyward Kickstarter and get your copy of a great book that is finally being finished in a way that I think a lot of people were really sad that it never would be. But Matt, we've asked other people some questions. Now it's time for other people to ask us questions. We're really flipping the script on this.
What a concept.
I could use a little fuel myself.
All right, here's a question from an anonymous questioner on Tumblr. We got this one a while back also. So even though it is talking about a book that is about to come out as of the question, it is now out and has been out for a few months. The question is, so I know all of Tomb of Dracula is worth reading, but should I pick up the Werewolf by Night trade that's coming out? That trade came out back in October.
I actually have it on my shelf right now.
It's Werewolf by Night, the Complete Collection, Volume 1. And you can grab it on Amazon now for $25 in paperback. But if you want to grab it on Kindle or on Comixology, it's only $10 there.
I'd say it's worth somewhere between those two prices. look, if you are asking if you should read all of Werewolf by Night, I feel like you probably shouldn't. I feel like you're probably not going to have a super good time if you don't already know you want that sweet, sweet Marvel Universe werewolf action in your life.
It is the arguably the most Bronze Age Marvel comic.
I mean, it's got all the stuff. It's got the supernatural. It's got a guy with a bad name.
It's written by Jerry Conway and Lin Wein.
Yeah, that's the that is the Bronze Ageiest of writing partnerships.
Yeah. Also, Marv Wolfman got in there because he had to because of his name.
Oh, he's the Wolfman.
Yeah.
He's the Wandering Wolfman. Matt, you know about that. Wandering Wolfman. If you're the kind of person who's sitting there being like, I want to read these Marvel Werewolf comics, absolutely get it. Drop $10. If you're on the fence, I feel like those don't have the same universal appeal as, say, a Tomb of Dracula, which I understand that I just generally like Tomb of Dracula more, so grain of salt and all that, but there are more modern werewolf comics with a more modern sensibility that you may enjoy more out there.
And I feel like Werewolf by Night isn't a comic to recommend to somebody who loves werewolves. Mm-hmm. It's a comic to recommend to somebody who specifically loves Marvel Comics horror characters.
Yes, yes. And like, if you're going to recommend any Marvel comic werewolf, it's going to be Hero Astronaut John Jameson, I think.
You talking about Man-Wolf?
I'm talking about the Star God.
Yeah. But I like, if you have an interest in those kinds of comics, in Bronze Age comics, in Marvel monsters, and you've never read the Werewolf by Night stuff, I mean, definitely drop $10 on it to get the digital version.
What would you say, Matt, if people want to know, like, want the best example of Bronze Age Marvel comics, what should they get? Like, what is the, like, prime example of what we talk about when we say Bronze Age Marvel comics?
I mean, Werewolf by Night would be up there.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying it's the most Bronze Age Marvel comic. Tomb of Dracula is definitely up there. Probably some like Bronze Age Defenders shit.
Marvel 2-in-1. Marvel, I know they did a couple of they did all of Marvel 2-in-1 and Essentials. So if you can track those down, I'd say like those would be worth reading just to see if you're going to have a good time. Also like Hero for Hire is probably a good one to check out.
Any Ghost Rider comic from that? Like Marvel Spotlight Ghost Rider?
Oh, all of those early Ghost Rider books, all of those early Ghost Rider stories should be in your eyes.
Yeah. Those are all good ones. Good places to start.
For sure. Maybe not the universal recommendation that we would give to Bronze Age stuff like Black Panther in Jungle Action or TOD or naturally like stuff like the X-Men that you've probably heard of already. But if you're curious, I think it's worth it. But if you're not into it, I don't think it's going to sell you on the concept.
All right. With that, we will wrap up this episode of War Rocket Ajax. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do that one of two ways. You can send it to us on Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Just hit the ask box, or you can email it to us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That email address is also where you could send every story ever and panel president lists. It's also where you can let us know if you want to sponsor the show, or if you just want to hit us up some other way, you can do that, all of that stuff right there. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Please give us a rating on your favorite podcasting app, whatever it may be, Apple Podcasts or something else. The more positive reviews we get, the more eyes we get on the show and ears. Ears are probably more important than eyes for a podcast. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to all my stuff, including my books, my other comics, my other podcasts, and anything else I'm doing. I will put it there. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Everybody can head to the-isb.com. That is the Invincible Superblog, where you can find links to all the podcasts that I do and all the comics that I write and all the columns that I write around the web. I was actually just updating it this morning to include some more recent stuff that is now available in paperback, like Sword Quest and Ash vs. Army of Darkness will be out in May. So head over there and you can find ways to buy my work. Matt, that does it. But before we get out of here, do we have a good cause of the week?
I think our good cause of the week is to contribute to the Jeremy Dale Kickstarter. That is...
Yeah.
A good way to honor the memory of a comic creator we were big fans of.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely check that out. Help get Skyward Imprint, help Jeremy's legacy live on, and do the right thing and get a good comic while you're at it.
And if we want to throw a cause into the mix, we can throw in one for another dear departed comic book creator. If you want to kick in some money, you can do so for the Mike Waringo Scholarship at the Savannah College of Art and Design. I know there is a foundation for that. There is a way to send donations to make sure that that happens. And it's a way to help up-and-coming comic artists in the world. So maybe go check that out. That's at ringoscholarship.com.
Absolutely. So that's it for this week for us. We will be back with another great show next week. But in the meantime, Matt, how did we do?
Chris, the show, it was HQC, and it was S-ranked.
Oh, we got that S. That means we completed it just in time.
That's right. We haven't missed it.
It's Christmas Day. Bye, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah! Flash.